Well, it's about that time. Good morning. Welcome to your second day of South by Southwest. I'm very impressed that you guys got up this morning and battled the rain to come to hear my presentation. Can you tweet that? Social media and the law. If you do tweet about this, oh, they're still getting the slide set up. The hashtag is #SMLaw. And just a little bit of background about myself and why I'm speaking on this. I am a professor at Texas State University, and I actually teach in our public relations sequence and teach PR classes and some social media classes. So I am not a lawyer, but I do watch, I have probably watched all of the episodes of Law and Order. But this is a topic that in the School of Journalism we really want our students to know about. And as I'm training young professionals, I feel like, you know, these are some areas that we need to talk about. And there's just been some interesting cases for the rise of social media, during the rise of social media. And as they're still getting this set up, I thought we had this all taken care of. Feel free to have your phones out. I mean, I know y'all are going to tweet anyway, but there is some interactivity, some polling that I am going to ask for you guys for your participation. I'm going to go through this, but feel free while we're talking, if you have a specific question, you can go ahead and ask that. But we'll also have a full Q&A session at the end. How are we doing, guys?
It just keeps going back. I don't know what the deal is.
So, and as they're still working on that, let me go ahead and just make sure that you guys know what I'm covering today. I'm going to cover defamation, copyright, and First Amendment and hate speech. So if you're interested in learning about trademarks or some of the other stuff, some IP issues, that might be better covered at the next session that's in here at 11. So come on in, folks. There's plenty of seats scattered throughout. We're just trying to get our video up and running. Sorry about this. Are we? No.
It won't stay.
It won't stay.
It was up there, and then 30 seconds later, it's gone.
Well, let me go ahead and start covering this while they're trying to fix this. So the first section, the first thing I want to talk about is defamation. And the question is, what is it? Well, you want to start off with a couple of definitions, and the first definition is libel. Libel is written or broadcast or otherwise published words that do damage to a person and or their reputation. Slander is the same thing, but instead of being written, it's actually spoken. Now, the thing you do have to understand is if it's broadcast, like if it's on the radio or TV, that's still considered libel because it's a mass medium publication. But if it's just somebody talking, speaking, giving a speech, then it would be called slander. So because there's a little bit of confusion, just simply because of the idea that, okay, somebody says something on the radio and that's libel, but somebody says something in a speech and that's slander. Really, in legal terms, we combine it and just call it defamation. So you'll hear me call things defamation. You'll hear me call things libel. There really is not a whole lot of difference between the two. The next thing I want to talk about definition for is a private citizen versus a public person. Sorry, I'm letting this kind of get to me. So a public person is somebody that is in the public eye, a celebrity, a professional athlete. you know, there's a fairly high threshold for public activity to make somebody a public figure. A private citizen is just somebody like you or I. But a public figure could also be like a politician, could be somebody that's just in the news. And there is the idea of a limited purpose public figure or somebody who puts themselves in the forefront of the news or a particular controversy that's coming out to speak about that. So I'll give you an example that I was talking about to a colleague earlier this week. I had a student ask, well, what if it is a third string quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys? Would he, you know, he just comes, he plays, at, or doesn't play, probably not well if he's playing for the Cowboys, and, you know, and does his job and nobody even knows his name. Would they be still be considered a, you know, a public person? The answer is yes, just because he is a paid professional athlete. Now, the question comes to the athletic trainers. If it is like a junior level athletic trainer for the Cowboys, probably not. They are probably considered a private citizen. What happens, though, and we've seen this recently with some of the drug testing cases, somebody who may have done a urine sample that was a trainer that all of a sudden started speaking out about it, that's what we would be calling a limited purpose public figure. So up until the point that they started speaking out publicly and giving interviews, they were a private person. Now, the idea of this public person versus private person, we'll talk about this when we look at the defenses for libel or the test for libel, but this actually came about in a Supreme Court case in the 1960s. Actually, in 1960, there was an ad in the New York Times that said, heed their rising voices. It was a group of ministers trying to raise funds for the defense of Martin Luther King Jr. And he was being indicted in Alabama on perjury. And basically the ad said that the public officials in Alabama, not really cool dudes, were really trying to suppress a lot of this stuff and really trying to, you know, stop the civil rights movement. Well, one of the folks was a guy named L.B. Sullivan, and he was the Montgomery Public Safety Commissioner. And he said, I don't like what they said. Now, he wasn't actually the person who was named in that particular ad. He was just a guy, and you know, he was the police commissioner, the public safety commissioner, but he wasn't actually named. But he didn't like what was said, and he felt like it showed that he wasn't doing a good job. And he sued the New York Times in Alabama court. And one of the things is that the ad did have some factual errors. They talked about how many times Martin Luther King was indicted and they were off. They, you know, they said like he was indicted 9 times and it was only 5 times or something. But anyway, he, because of the laws in Alabama, he actually won the court case and won $500,000 against the New York Times. Well, the New York Times is thinking, no, we're not going to stand for this. And the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And so in the New York Times versus Sullivan, the Supreme Court looked at the idea of a public person versus a private citizen. And that's where they started drawing the lines between the two. And that was the case that really set it up, that there are, you know, private citizens and they're public personas, or persons, excuse me. And, you know, from there, It's just kind of grown to this idea. Now, again, sometimes it's really hard. There's some gray areas. Is this a private person? Is this a public citizen? And like I said, there are the limited times where somebody may be considered a public person. Now, why do we care about this? Well, when we're looking at libel or defamation, there are 5 tests of libel. The first test is defamation, which means, does it really hurt somebody? Is somebody really getting damaged from that? The second test is publication. Was it seen and heard by others? The third test is identification. Was the person actually singled out? And then we have negligence. And I'll get back to that in a second. And then the last thing is damages, and which means, was there out-of-pocket loss? Now, the thing about negligence is where we come into the private and the public person. So if it's a private citizen, the question is, is it just simple negligence? Did somebody just say something and really didn't mean anything by it? It's a little bit looser. But when it's a public person, you have to prove actual malice. This person set out and said something that they knew wasn't true just to damage me. So an offhanded remark might hold for a private citizen, might hold up with the test of libel for the private citizen, but for a public person, this is where you have to prove that somebody actually went out and said something and knew that it wasn't true. And it's really interesting, even though it's not social media per se, if you look at what was going on with Rush Limbaugh in the last couple of weeks. And he called that Georgetown College student a slut. Well, she would be considered more than likely a private citizen, although some folks could argue because she did testify in front of Congress, because she does claim that she's an activist, that she might be considered a public person. But let's look at the test of libel. First of all, defamation, exposing a person or organization to hatred, contempt, or ridicule. Did Rush Limbaugh do that? Yes? Okay. And prostitute. She's a slut and a prostitute. Okay, so he did say that. Publication. Could it be seen and heard by others? Yes. It was on his radio show. Identification. Was she singled out and identified? Yes, her name's Sandra Fluke. We all know that because of this. And it is kind of interesting. I mean, that's also one of the things that you want to think about. A friend of mine sent me a blog earlier this week that some lady went on a rant about her baby daddy. And if she had, and he's kind of like gone off scene and is not paying for anything and all this other stuff. And it's kind of interesting, but if she just left it as her baby's father, maybe there wasn't anything, but she actually linked to his Twitter profile. So that's definitely identification. Negligence. Did Rush Limbaugh say something? If she's a private citizen, it's just simple negligence. So that definitely what he said would be held up. The part that's not easily to be known whether it would pass the test is the damages, the out-of-pocket loss. Now, she might be able to claim some emotional damages, but let's face it, is she going to lose her job? Somebody said no. First of all, she's a college student. But the second of all, she's probably more likely to get a job because people now know her. I mean, even the president called her up and talked to her and apologized for what Limbaugh said. So, you know, it would be really hard for that particular case if she decided to sue him, and I haven't heard that she's going to, but if she decided to sue him, that would be the one thing that her lawyer would have to really work out and prove was the damages. Now, well, there's five tests of libel. There's actually three defenses. The first one is truth. What I said is the truth. You can't argue with it. The second thing is privilege. Now, this comes mainly for reporters, and it basically says that I can report on a public official in doing something that or is doing something in a public capacity. So the mayor of Austin getting drunk at a entrepreneur party and dancing on the bar, and anybody that's from Austin really can't picture Mayor Leffingwell doing this, but you know, if that happened, and I'm a reporter, I have every right to do that. That's privilege information. That's information that the public should know about. And then the last test, our defense for libel, is what's called fair comment and criticism. And basically that's saying, hey, this is an opinion. I have every right to my opinion, and I can state my opinion. So again, thinking about Rush Limbaugh and Sandra Fluke, well, we can't prove that that's truth and that he knows about it. And it's definitely not privilege. But Rush Limbaugh is not a news reporter. He is a commentator. He has his own opinion. And so he would be protected under the fair comment and criticism. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Also, do these same definitions apply to social media? Because a lot of times social media is such a gray area. So, I mean, all the definitions are great and everything, but how does this apply to particular social media content?
So, and I'm getting to that. I was just using Rush Limbaugh because it was in the mind for that. But really, the laws apply to the same thing. And, you know, you look at a tweet or a Facebook post in the same way as you would look at a printed piece. And like I said, I'm getting ready to talk about a case that's more social media oriented. Yes, sir. Okay, so to address your first thing, it goes back to the original, not what's published afterwards. But also, under fair comment and criticism is the whole idea of satire and poking fun. This is why Saturday Night Live, this is why Jon Stewart can do what they do. And, you know, you were talking about Carnival and other cultures. I should state that laws will vary from country to country, and that what I'm talking about is primarily U.S.-based. And like I said, I'm not going to talk about trademarks, but I know this, that if you look at trademarks in Europe, for example, like in particular in France, there are some companies that are getting in trouble. Like, I think Google was getting in trouble because they allowed the Google ads that would say, buy a Louis Vuitton ripoff. And, you know, Louis Vuitton is trademarked. And they actually couldn't sue Google in the U.S. because of that. So it really does vary. And like I said, I know that the next session's going to speak on trademark, and we'll be able to talk about that a little bit more. The other thing that I forgot to mention in the private citizen versus public person, organizations, companies are considered public persons. So they're almost like celebrities. And like I said, it's this fair comment and criticism that lets the National Enquirer get away with publishing what it is, because they said there's no way that somebody can actually believe what we're saying is true. There's no way that somebody would actually believe that Elvis's alien baby has come back and has been born in Texas and is walking around. Whatever. But that's kind of where they go with this. And this is why celebrities cannot fare well when they have this kind of thing because of the defense of the fair comment and criticism. This is why celebrities, actually, what they do is that they make folks that work with them sign these ironclad confidentiality things. So saying, you can say absolutely nothing about me for 10 years after employment, or however long that it is. And then, you know, if somebody actually breaks that, then they sue them for that. They don't sue the National Enquirer for what it's published. Wesley?
What if it's a person who is a spouse, a child, a relative? Are they considered people because this is someone's public?
So that's a good question. What Wesley asked is, if you're a spouse of a public figure, are you considered a public figure? No. And the case that is talked about with that is, and I don't remember which Firestone, but one of the Firestone heirs was going through a messy divorce with his wife. And all of this stuff was being said in the media. And the judge ruled, and again, it comes down to what the judge rules. So one judge might rule something on one day, and one might rule something slightly different on the other day. But it was found that she was still considered a private citizen. She never put herself out there. Now, Susan Dell, the wife of Michael Dell, I would argue, is a public person because of the stuff that she does for the foundation, because of some businesses that she has started herself, because of her position in the community. But, you know, if you're somebody that's not part of that socialite scene, just because you're the spouse of somebody who is well known, you know, you're not considered a public person. Okay, so what does all this in Rush Limbaugh mean for libel? Well, or in social media, excuse me. So in 2009, this is like the first time that we saw this, was 2009, and there was this girl who lived in an apartment complex, and she put this tweet out that said, you know, who said sleeping in a moldy apartment was bad for you? Horizon Realty thinks that that's okay. Basically, she had been trying to get her apartment complex to fix some things that were wrong in the apartment, and she just finally had it. She just finally had it, and she tweeted something about that. And I know that folks that follow me have got to hear me rant about AT&T and DirecTV and the post office and so on and so on. So I could really relate to Amanda. So yes, Horizon Realty decided to sue her. the question comes up, and this is where I want you guys to get your phone. Oh, excuse me. It's actually a poll. The poll's not showing up.
Is it a link to a website?
Well, I had it embedded, but we can link it to a website.
Well, if you have it embedded, you need an internet connection.
Okay, you know what? Let's just... Best laid plans. I actually had this really cool poll. But, you know, you guys are awake enough and alert enough and talking, so we'll just talk it through. So the question is, damn, I hated that too because I thought the poll would be cool. Does this meet the test of libel? So does her tweet meet the test of libel? And going back to the test of libel, it is defamation. Did she cause harm to Horizon Realty? It's publication. Could others see it and know this? And she only had maybe like 20-something followers. Was there identification? You know, was Horizon actually pointed out? Was there negligence? And because it's a company, it would actually have to prove actual malice. Did she set out to knowingly disregard the truth? And are there damages? Are they not going to be able to rent apartments because of this? So thinking about the five tests of libel: defamation, publication, identification, negligence, and damages. How many folks think that that meets the test of libel? Raise your hands. Only a few. How many think that it does not meet the test of libel? Okay, just moving on just a second. Does Amanda have a defense for this? And if you, so we're saying yes, so I don't even have to go through the three tests of defense. So, you know, really honestly, can she be sued? Yes, because anybody can sue anything for anything, because that's just filing something, right? I can sit here and decide to sue Wesley because he looked at me wrong. What's going to happen? The judge is going to sit there and say, get out of here, this is a stupid law case, which is exactly what happened in this particular case that went before the judge. And he's like, what? It doesn't even meet the five tests for libel. Get this out of here. We're not going to clog up the court systems. So bottom line, if you're using your own fair comment and criticism, and it is a public person or an organization which is considered a public person, and you're giving your fair comment and criticism, and you're not setting out to do anything malicious, then you know what? I can go ahead and say DirecTV sucks as much as I want to, because, well, and I could also argue that that's the truth, but... You know, that is my opinion with my interaction, and I'm not necessarily setting out to do this. Now, what if somebody really wanted to start a campaign of smear? Well, yes, like I said, that could happen, so you want to watch out for it. But again, if we're talking about public figures, it's a little bit harder. You had a question. again, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't give specific. But that's also better because I can actually state my opinion a little bit more. You know, again, companies get around this by doing different things, so they could sue them for blackmail. And it would also depend, I think, on who the lawyer is and how they wanted to do that. But if there were emails that said, I'm going to get out there and blackmail you, then I would show that that was proof for actual malice. But they would actually have to go out and let them do that and then lose money and then court cases. When I talk to businesses, particularly small businesses, I encourage them to use customer comments as a way to get feedback and improve. Does that help? Right. You know, and when I wrap up, I mean, part of that is that, you know, the fact that this is a new field and laws lag behind technology. And, you know, we haven't had anything to particularly test that, that I'm aware of. But again, like I said, a lot of companies use other things. There was a case with in Alabama with the Food Lion, and some reporter went undercover to look at how they processed meat, and it was pretty disgusting, actually. But how they did that is that they did an employment application and got hired and then wore a wire and did all of this. Well, in terms of, so Food Lion knew that they could not sue them for defamation, but what they sued them for instead was lying on their employee contract, on their employment application. And Food Lion actually won that. But the judge was so disgusted at the way that they handled food that they awarded just a very, very small amount. So they said, yes, you're right, they lied, but it was more important for the public to know how disgusting you are. And so we're not going to give you too much money for that. So let's go ahead and talk about copyright. So copyright protects creative work and intellectual property. So if you're a writer, a blogger, if you write music, if you create art, if you do photography, you want your work copyrighted. And while we generally use a copyright symbol, this copyright symbol, please note that it's protected whether or not you actually publish that. Now, they look at copyright two different ways. One is the individual. So if you, I can't see your name. So if Stephen went home and wrote a great blog post about something at South by Southwest and it went viral, he is protected for his life plus 70 years. Now, if he does, he works for himself, but say that he worked for another company and he did this on behalf, SmartBrief. So he's blogging for SmartBrief. The copyright, more than likely, I'll talk about this in a second, belongs to SmartBrief, which means that it only lasts for 95 years. Now, when you're working for a company, whether it's a freelance basis or an employee contract, make sure you have it clear who owns the copyright. In general, as an employee or a freelancer, it's considered work for hire, which means the company that you're doing it for owns the copyright. However, in some cases, you can retain your own copyright. But make sure that you get that in writing. Great example. A friend of my husband's family was a guy named Grim Natwick. He is the creator of Betty Boop. He worked for Max Fleischer at Fleischer Studios. So everybody thinks Max Fleischer did Betty Boop. I can guarantee you it was Grimm. We have tons of Betty Boops in our house that have belonged to Grimm. Well, Grimm left Fleischer to go to Disney because he was going to animate the Snow White character. He was really known for the female form. And he and Max had a handshake agreement that Nat was going to actually own, Grimm Natwick. There's a thing that we have in our house that had changed his name. Grimm actually was supposed to be, they had a handshake, and Grimm was supposed to own the rights for Betty Boop. Well, no, because, things happen. Nobody knew that. Fleischer died. The company went to his son. They eventually sold the rights to Paramount, et cetera, et cetera. Grimm did not own the copyrights for Betty Boop. Now, because it was Fleischer Studios, and I was trying to read this because this, before I came in, because there was a huge court case last year about Fleischer's estate suing Paramount because Paramount sold the rights to something else. So I'm not exactly sure, when the copyright is going to end on that. But when it does, I can take some of the cells, some of the Betty Boop pictures that we have that, no one else has seen and actually publish that because it's considered in the public domain. If you ever think about why they don't sing Happy Birthday in restaurants, because it's the life plus 70 years. Somebody actually still owns the copyright for that. So if we started singing Happy Birthday in this room, we would have to pay royalties for that. So this is why the big chain restaurants, have their own birthday song. Now, just to let you know, copyright forms, like if you are working for yourself, yes, sir. No, it's just publication, okay? And we'll talk about fair use in a second, because sometimes you can do a sample of something and get away with it, but if it's doing it where you're going to make money, you can't. But that's on the next slide.
Yeah. The big case is CCNB, the copyright work for hire case.
Uh-huh. Okay, I have not read up on that one, so I apologize. Some folks will talk about a poor man's copyright, which basically says that whatever you write, seal it in an envelope, mail it to yourself and not open it, and it has the date to prove the way that you've done that. Just FYI, that's never actually been tested in court, so nobody knows whether that holds up. But there's a simple copyright form that you can fill out, that you can download from the internet and fill out and get your stuff copyrighted. So I had mentioned fair use. There's this idea that you can quote from a copyrighted article, but it has to be brief in terms of what the thing is. This is why we get like all the sample music. Where somebody's sampling music in a larger song, they took a brief snippet and put that in. Now, if it is for commercial purposes, and this is probably what's happened more than likely, is that I go to the owner of the copyright and ask them for permission and pay royalties because there's not the idea of fair use if you're actually using it to make money. Does that make sense? And I get this from small businesses. They get an article in a particular publication, and they're like, well, can't I just copy and paste it on my website? The answer's no. You can put the link to it, but it has to go back to the original material. It's really interesting. If you look, Pinterest and Flickr recently added these opt-out codes allowing websites to put in this opt-out code that will not allow you to upload, take a picture from there and put it on Flickr or put it on Pinterest, pin it to your Pinterest board. And also what Pinterest did, it used to be that they had unlimited space in the comments. So what they were finding out are people were taking whole how-to articles and copying it and pasting it into the comments, and all of a sudden, it's there on Pinterest. And Pinterest is like, no, we're really trying to link back to the original site. And so they've done away with that. And again, it's that idea that you cannot just take something from one site and put it totally on your Pinterest board and act like it's your own, because that's copyrighted. But you can pin the link, pin the picture on your Pinterest, and then if somebody wants to learn more, they click on it and it goes back to the original site. And you think, well, how is this different from sharing on Facebook and Twitter? Well, each time that you upload to Facebook, it will ask you, do you own the copyright for this? And you have to say, yes or no, I own the copyright for this. And also, speaking of Facebook, I had a couple of folks ask me, well, who owns, if you do post something on Facebook, I heard that Facebook now owns the copyright. That's not true. You still, their terms of service say that you still own the copyright, but by uploading something, you have given them permission to use it without paying royalties as long as it is basically in promotion for Facebook. So you have a great picture and you put it on Facebook and Facebook sees it, they can use it in a commercial for Facebook. They can use it in a promotion. It could all of a sudden be on a billboard someplace that says, how do you Facebook, and have this picture because you have given them the right to that. And that's part of the terms of service. So I do know some folks that never post anything because they're so concerned about that. And the weird thing is you can say, no, I don't want this, but if you've got a picture with a friend and your friend uploads the picture, you're still part of that because your friend has just given permission to use that photo. Yes, sir.
On Pinterest, how much can you take
from an article?
Like, can you take the first few words or the first paragraph?
It's relative to the length of the article. And I don't know the very specifics of it, but it has to be brief. And what I do know is I can put as a professor a book on what we call e-reserve, and I can say scan chapters, like it's a 22-page book, scan chapters one and two and have that available for the students. And then I tell them to take it down at some point and scan chapters 3 and 4 and put it up. Unfortunately, I can't have them scan the whole book and put it up because that would break the copyright. If you cite the source and link back to it, but that's, again, you don't want to have the whole thing. You just want to have it brief, and then you cite it and you link it back. And one of the things that you might also think about, too, as you're using things for your blogs, is go on creativecommons.org. And Creative Commons, people will sit there and say, okay, this is my photo and you can use it as long as you credit me, or this is my photo and you can use it as blah 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 blah, and they'll give you different ways that you can use it. So they're actually giving you permission to use their stuff, so that's a great way. And there are some folks, at least social media folks, that will argue that that's the way that it should be. Of course, then, again, you have the lawyers that will argue it should never be like that. But if you're wanting to look for photos, Creative Commons is a great place to go. Okay, so here is a fairly famous copyright infringement case. On the left is a photo from the Associated Press taken of President Obama. And this was... either before or during the 2008 campaign. And then there's the Hope poster. And the guy that did the Hope poster on the right, his name is Shepherd Ferry. And you look at the two photographs, and the Associated Press said that he violated their copyrights. Because you can't, like I said, you can take a small amount, and even creatively, you can change it, but it has to look pretty different from the original. You know, I've heard something like 80%. I'm not sure if that's exactly true, but you look at those two pictures. So what do you think? Do you think that Shepherd Ferry violated copyright here? How many people raise their hands? How many people think yes? How many people think no? And then a lot of people are just undecided. My personal opinion, I look at that and I say, oh my God, he so ripped off that photo. My students somehow just don't get it. So the photographer for that was named Manny Garcia. Manny contends that his agreement with the Associated Press gave him the copyright. And while he doesn't believe that it's okay just to go and take things, he really liked what Ferry did with this picture. Now, in terms of court settlement, they settled out of court for an undisclosed amount. And now Ferry and the Associated Press are working together to develop other ways to use this Hope image to make money, and for Ferry to actually take some Associated Press photos and do other things with it. So, you know, instead of fighting out who owns the, did he violate copyright, they just decided that there was some financial thing. We're not going to tell the world what it was, but now we're going to work together for all of us to make money. Interesting case. So this is, this came last summer. There was a photographer named David Slater, and he was working. This was a work for hire for Cater's News Agency. And he was in an Indonesian national park shooting photographs of the crested black Macaque monkeys. Well, he accidentally left his camera behind. And when he came back, there was something like 300 monkey images. This was a photograph taken by a monkey. So there was a reporter for an online publication, and he actually reported about this story, and he put the pictures of the monkeys online. Cater's came back and said, you have to take that down. We own the copyright. And he's like, bullshit, you don't own the copyright. And they kind of got into a little bit of a media conversation, or conversation through the media, on who owns the copyright. So what do you think? Who thinks that the photographer owns the copyright? Who thinks that the Cater's News Agency owns the copyright? Who thinks that the monkeys own the copyright? And who thinks no one owns the copyright? Well, the answer, at least in my opinion, and what a lot of other folks would say no one owns the copyright. Because according to the U.S. Copyright Code, in order to be entitled to copy registration, a work must be the product of a human authorship. Okay, so that's a little bit of a trick question. But, you know, a monkey, and again, the work, the copyright is by the person that did this or the company that he or she was working for, if it's considered a work for hire. So if he purposely left it back there for the, you know, that would be one thing, but he originally said, I just forgot. And it was interesting because after people were starting to talk about this in media law, in media circles, he came back and backtracked and said, no, I meant for that to happen. I meant for the monkeys. I knew the monkeys were going to take the photos. Yeah. No. I had a question here. But didn't he work for the insurance company?
Right, he did, but it wasn't like, you know, God wasn't to go out and yeah. Photo the fire.
I'll be honest, I'm a little unclear about that, and I would have to do some, you know, if you email me, I'll do some research and find that out, but I would contend because he was an employee of the insurance company, and it was their thing that's why they own it. But I would have to do some more research on that. And there was a question back here. Okay. Remind me, either tweet me or send me an email, and it'll be at the end. I'll look into that and get you guys an answer. Yes, ma'am. So she was asking who owns that. That tends to go more into IP, and I wasn't planning to cover this. But there have been some stories that have come out, and I can tell you my opinion, but let's wait until we get to the very end, okay? And I'm happy to tell you my opinion on some things that I've been reading about that lately. So the last thing I want to talk about is First Amendment and hate speech. Now, a lot of folks say, hey, I can say anything because of the First Amendment. Well, if you actually look at the First Amendment, it says that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. It never says that you can say anything that you want to say. It says Congress can make no law. Now, there's certain types of speech considered hate speech that are not protected. Lewd and obscene speech, profane, libelous, and insulting or fighting words. And fighting words are those by which the very utterance inflict injury or tend to incite an immediate breach of the peace. So, Casey Anthony, the woman that the country loved to hate last summer. Just recently, I went back to Facebook to see how many pages were entitled F. Casey Anthony. And I quit counting at 40 because I was not a math major. And I'm not even talking about other things. I mean, I typed in fuck Casey Anthony and a whole bunch of pages came up. And if you actually look, this was a screenshot from last fall. And the first person says, who wants to form a strike team and take her out? And then somebody said hiring a hitman in Mexico only cost $500 last time I checked. And there were all sorts of things. And if you see the icon, it says slap a bitch. So the question comes, is this page and all the other pages like it, are they protected by the First Amendment? So how many folks say that this is protected by the First Amendment and these people have every right to say what they want to say? A couple of folks. Who would say that this is hate speech and it's not protected? So hate speech is kind of interesting. You know, I would really say that this is hate speech, but when you really get down to what the law says, it has to encourage illegal violence, but the threat of the violence has to be immediate, meaning you sitting there, saying something, and you're here, and you're raising a fist to me, then that's considered imminent. But these people are on Facebook, and it's not really considered, that it's really going to happen in the next day or so. But if this were something where it was like the schools and a kid saying, I'm going to take a AK-47 to school the next day, you could almost say that that was hate speech. Yes, ma'am. You know, like I said, the courts have said it has to show an immediate danger, you know? And so there is some legal gray areas there. Somebody else had a question. Yes, sir. Incitement means that I am telling all of you guys, hey, come on, let's get up. Let's go storm the Capitol and, kill Governor Perry. I'm getting you guys to get up and go do that. That's incitement. Is that among what? I'm sorry. That's what they have to look at when they're looking at hate speech. Is it something that's going to get somebody worked up? If you think about like the neo-Nazi rhetoric and things that they say. Can I move on? Because we're almost out of time. I'm sorry. The one thing to look at, though, is that Facebook has terms of service. So while that page may not necessarily be covered or may not be covered, may not show hate speech, you do have the Facebook terms of service that says you will not bully, intimidate, or harass any users. You will not post content that is hateful, threatening, pornographic, incites violence, or contains nudity or graphic gratuitous violence. So while the Casey Anthony might not be protected by the First Amendment, I would actually argue that Facebook's own terms of service means that they need to take the damn pages down. I'm not the only person that thinks this. A couple of years ago, Brian Cuban, a lawyer and brother of the Mavericks owner, Mark Cuban, actually got into it with Facebook saying that they should take down the Holocaust deniers' pages, saying that it violated the terms of service. Facebook tried to argue First Amendment, but Brian kept saying, but you have your terms of service. You know, you can actually go out and protest Target on the sidewalk that's government owned, but you can't, if you walk into the Target or any ground that's owned by your local Target, they can kick you out. They have every right to do that. Where again, the First Amendment protects you from government interference, not corporate interference. So, final thoughts, and I don't know that, you know, we had questions in, so I don't know that we have time. I know y'all want to get to the next session, but it's, again, laws do not keep up with technology, and we're going to keep seeing more and more of these cases, and it's really going to look to, unfortunately, going to look to the lawyers, but media law and judges, media law scholars and judges to really keep up with this stuff. We're going to see more issues rise. But I would always argue, remember common sense and the golden rule. Do unto others. I mean, don't be mean and hateful. And then again, always cite your work and link to original content. I'm sorry that I rushed through the last few. If you would like to, tweet me at dquack, D-Q-U-A-C-K. And you can also email me at dara@darraquackenbush.com.
I just wanted to say that if the panelist wishes to, she can answer some of your questions outside or in the lobby, but we do have something else to do.
Yeah. And I also apologize for the technical issues, but thank you.